Yeah, so the other collaborators on this project are Dima Rindberg, who is now at Monell Institute for Chemical Senses in Philadelphia, and this is my postdoc, Mitya Tsigankov. So it's all Russian team. And I probably should say... Huh? So I probably should say that this stuff is not, I mean, to people who are not in the field, that this stuff is not in any way acceptable by majority of scientific community. So you should be very cautious, believing me. And basically, I mean, I'm just starting getting some response from biologists. And it's, of course, it's purely theoretical. So here's just for you to gauge your questions. Here's the plan of talk. And so I'm going to talk about decisions in linear chains, then in more complex topologies. Then I'm going to talk about some possible applications of to electric stimulation experiments and give some examples of social networks. So this is just definition of decision task. So the basic decision task which we are dealing with is very simple. So despite our education level and high dimensionality of the sensory input, the decision which we'll be facing in a couple of hours will be very simple. It's a binary decision. So in those tasks, I mean, the idea here is that in those tasks, our nervous system as the whole unit, it performs some sort of information reduction operation in which information is dissipated. So it originates from like megabytes of information which are hitting our sensory organs and so which are stored in our brain. And so on the basis of those megabytes, maybe more of information, we just make this simple decision, right? So, which brings me to the mathematical definition of discrete decision making, which is basically you have some kind of sensory input, which may be stored in memory too, and on the basis of this sensory input, you calculate a scalar function, which represents the repertoire of behaviors which are available to you. Right, and just by looking at this map, you can see that you can already see that there are two sorts of decisions which you can make. And those types of decisions have been identified even before this by neurophysiologists and philosophers, before this mathematical definition was given by us. So two types of decisions are deterministic decision. It's the responses which are reliably triggered by stimuli, right? So if you can reproduce conditions of some experiment reliably, the response will be predictable, okay? And there are also stochastic decisions in which you cannot basically, if you reproduce the same experiment, exactly the same experimental conditions, the response will be completely random, right? And in this particular example, I'll talk about it. So stochastic decisions can be like very crudely separated into two parts, the first type of stochastic decision is when you don't have enough information, right, to render deterministic judgment. And those parts, deterministic decisions, they correspond to the cases when signal-to-noise ratio is large and you are deep in the areas of definite decision, right? So your sensory input or your memory brings you somewhere like deep into the area of discreteness. But stochastic decisions, they correspond, in case when you don't have enough information, they correspond to the interfaces between those discrete decisions, right? When they, like a little noise can actually trigger different responses. Another case when stochastic decisions become relevant is when the optimal strategy which organism has to follow is actually random. Like in this case, for example. I mean, if you follow deterministic strategy or pure strategy in this case, you would have to, like if you always throw a rock, right? Then your opponent will learn it immediately and respond deterministically and you will lose, right? So your optimal strategy in this case is to mix randomly, as randomly as possible, the different pure strategies and to respond to follow actually mixed strategy, right, which is called. So basically throw rock, scissors or pepper with one-third probability, right? So in this case, it's a stochastic decision which you are making, but there is no sensory input, right? You could argue, in fact, that this case is similar to the former case, in which you have input but very weak. Right, so I mean, mathematically, those two types of stochastic decisions are not really distinguishable, because you could argue that in this case, like utility of those different responses are so similar that.
In cases when you repeat an experiment, the outcome might look stochastic simply because the subject is not always recognizing the same objective function. Let's say you have several ways to drive from your home to work.
Right.
So you make different decisions every day because whether you might be more in your hurry.
Right, you don't know, basically, yeah.
How do you want to take a more scenic route? So you're making, prioritizing something over others, which means that you're changing your coefficients.
Right.
Relative coefficients in your cost function. So that somebody who's monitoring the outcome might believe it's stochastic, but what happens is that there's slight non-stationarity in the objective.
Right, so you're basically trying to learn non-stationarity by.
It might be easier. It might be a stationary, the same function that you're trying to optimize, but you don't observe that the guy just, you know, ate something bad this morning and wants to get
exactly.
Right.
So there are other conditions.
It's the same function, but it's different.
That's also a possibility, yeah.
Another example is escape behaviors, of course. I mean, if somebody is pursuing someone, then the pursuant sometimes chooses a random strategy just to avoid confuse the predator. Mm-hmm. And there are many like examples of this described in literature. Mm-hmm. I can talk about them for hours, but probably I will not. Everybody who played some kind of like American football, for example, knows that sometimes it makes sense to confuse the other side. But of course, stochastic decisions. I mean, there are some examples of stochastic decisions which have been studied in neurobiology, and this is one of the examples in which this monkey is performing a motion discrimination task, and what monkey sees is this of course task which was promoted by Bill Newsom and Mike Scheidlin. So this is the monkey stares at fixation points, and it sees a screen on which there is a set of points. There are actually two sets of points. One set of points is moving randomly, and another set of points has a coherent movement, in this case to the left. And monkey, just by looking at those random dots, is supposed to make a saccade. So if it sees motion to the left, it's supposed to make a saccade to target on the left, and vice versa. So this is an example where both stochastic and deterministic decisions are present. So deterministic decisions are present.
Did you say the task again?
So the task is, so the monkey stares here, and then it sees the snowy screen. And if it sees a net motion to the left in this snowy screen, it has to seek out to the left. It has to move the eyes to the left. There is no overall motion of this thing. It's like it's a circle, but within circle, there are random dots.
Okay. Random dots are moving.
Random dots are moving, and some of them are random, but some of them have a net component of movement to in one direction. And monkey is supposed to guess. Well, so those dots which are moving to the left, mm-hmm. they represent signal, and the dots which are moving randomly represent noise.
What does signal mean?
Right. Said that it's moving coherently and the rest is moving randomly, and he's supposed to distinguish the coherent motion of the subset with respect to the random
motion.
Yeah. Okay. And the background is all random.
He's supposed to average, right?
Yeah.
Well, what he does.
And you can control the relative fraction of points that are moving coherently, so the smallest that fraction is, mm-hmm. the more noisy the task is. Mm-hmm. And the larger proportion that are moving coherently, the larger the signal is.
Okay. And then what they do is they make a psychometric function where they plot randomness versus correct answer.
Yeah.
And then they look to see at what point the decision's really being made on that function.
Yeah, so I'm not going to really talk about this particular experiment much. It's just that motivation for the study.
So it's important that it's close to perceptual threshold, right? It's kind of important that it's a hard task.
Right, so there are two regimes in which this monkey can perform the task. There is this deterministic regime in which there are much more dots which have coherent motion. And then you like know right away where they are going, right? And that's the deterministic case. And there is also stochastic case in which the number of coherently moving dots is small, so you cannot really tell where it's going, or the monkey cannot tell.
You have like 5% of points going left, 3% going right, and the rest is random.
I guess so. I mean,
there's an enormous literature about this class.
Yeah.
Experiment.
Yeah.
And many things have been tried, but it's also fairly easy to come up with one that hasn't. So you want to have a discussion about which things have been tried.
So I will be talking.
You want to try something else.
I'll be mostly talking about around like almost a zero coherence case, okay? So which is stochastic. So my goal here will be to discuss stochastic decisions close to threshold. And the question which I will be asking is the following. So here's some visual areas which presumably are involved. Well, some visual motor areas which are involved in this task. And of course the areas on the left. I mean, the systems on the left are more or less sensory, and like areas on the right are like areas of the brain on the right are more motor. Well, they're responsible for eye movement. So the question is, where on this axis, on this sensory motor axis, are the areas which are making decision about where to move the eyes? Okay.
So you're hypothesizing that such a place as this.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you define making a decision?
I will define it rigorously in a few slides. Yeah.
And you're differentiating decision from decision rule, right?
Yeah.
The decision is just whether you choose to make an eye movement to the left or the right, and whether that's the same, given the same stimuli, or does it vary across trials when you actually show the same stimuli? That would be stochastic, and deterministic would be if you show the same stimuli, the monkey making always the same decision.
I'm not getting into this. I mean, there is an infinite number of problems which you may have in this particular experiment, because it may occur that this like this area is changing dynamically, right? It may occur that there is no single area which is making. It's just like in each task, in each instance of the task, there are different areas. So it's just that, I mean, this slide is just for motivation of my question. And I mean the systems which I will be studying, they will be much simpler than this particular case. So, but I mean you cannot graduate from high school if you don't go to elementary school. So I'll be talking about elementary stuff. So just by inspired by this, I mean you will see by what I will be talking about immediately. So here's the simplest possible system in my view, which can make decisions, and so it's a linear chain, right? So you have elements which are connected by links, and each element is described by a very simple rule. So basically, it takes the input, the output of the previous element, and adds some noise to it. Okay, and noise is Gaussian distributed, and it's uncorrelated between units. I'm assuming like from the beginning. So those links, they have unit strength. Okay, so the last element of the network is different. So the last element, it just calculates thresholds, the output of the previous element xn. And it's a rate model in a sense, because x is a real number. It's not a spike, or I mean, there is no time dependence here. Yeah.
It's not restricted to be positive.
It can be both positive and negative. And of course, right. And of course, the output will also depend on the input, right? So this simple network, my point is that this simple network can make decisions, right? So it can implement this discrete function of single variable. And here's just expanded definition of what I mean by theta. So
why not just add all the noise at once? It seems
yeah.
to be no difference.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So I mean, you can solve it like just basically xn is just sum of noises in all elements, plus the first element.
But sum of Gaussian noise is just Gaussian noise. So.
Right. Right. So I mean, it's extremely simple model, and but
no,
the
what you're saying is a complicated model. It should be just xn equals x1. I mean, once
yeah.
you add noise,
there's
right.
a purpose. Yeah.
My purpose.
Imagine that the next slide would be more complicated.
Right. So my purpose will be, well, just to respond to this question, I mean, my purpose will be to tell, based on the variances of noise, will be to tell who is the most important decision maker. So I cannot lump them all together, because this I lose my purpose. So of course you can characterize this case by simple input output relationship. So average output is a function of input, and it will be a sigmoidal smeared by noise, which is the error function smeared by noise. Well, you can have two cases here. So you can have like high signal to noise ratio and low signal to noise ratio, right? So if x0 is far from zero, is larger than zero, much larger than the variance of noise, then you have deterministic decision. If x0 is smaller than noise, then you have stochastic decision. And then, well, to characterize responses of those units, I will use this mutual information between response of given unit and the output of the network. And of course, since the output of the network is just 1 bit, the mutual information cannot exceed 1 bit, right? So, and in the high signal to noise ratio case, the correlation between first element in the network and the output is perfect. So mutual information will look like a straight line, which is the horizontal function. Okay? But in low signal to noise ratio case, this first element in the network is correlated with input, but the output is not correlated with the input. So there will be very low correlation of the first element with the last element, and there will be like a gradual transition in this mutual information function from virtually zero to one bit, right? So then I have to make a choice. So on the basis of those two cases, I need to make a choice how to define decision makers here. And since this function doesn't have any structure, I mean, I can't really say who is making decision here. I will just choose the low signal to noise ratio case, right? Because, and I will be arguing, of course, that from the shape of this transition line, I can tell who decision makers are.
Sorry. So maybe the issue isn't so much what the, in the particular case where there's the same amount of noise added at every element, then the distinction you're drawing is between low signal to noise ratio and high signal to noise ratio. But if, for instance, the dominant noise source were at the input, then no matter how large or small it is, first case.
Yeah. So in this case, I would.
The reliability of your decisions is limited by noise at the input. You're going to have trouble deciding who the decision maker is.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly my point. So in deterministic case, in this case, there is no way to tell.
No. But you could be getting it right only half the time. It's just that if the dominant noise source is at the input, so you actually require that the subsequent circuitry be noisy, which is different than, right? There's two questions. One is the absolute signal to noise ratio, and the other is where the sources are.
But you may say that there is, that the noise is perfect, and then there is an extra unit in transit. So the input is perfect, and then there is an extra noise node between the input and that, and this happens, and then that node would be the most.
Yeah, it means it's gone.
Well, of course, I mean, even in this case, in high signal to noise ratio case. In this case, the variance of noise is larger than outside of the system is larger than variance of noise inside the system, right? And in some cases, indeed, it will occur randomly that variance of noise outside is really small. So I actually make a stochastic decision, right? So there is a problem there, indeed. But I will be talking only about this case. Yeah.
If you allow the noise to vary along the chain.
I think it's monotonic. I mean, it's monotonic by.
Correlations are going to get stronger.
It's an average.
So the point is, if all the noise in the monkey's decision in the newsroom task has to do with the seed of the random number generator that picked the random dots. So basically, in every given trial, there is an exponential.
This is what I call deterministic decision. This is what is called. Right, and that's because it's driven by the outside noise. And this is what it's called deterministic.
Yeah, but it goes into the bottom category on the clock because the performance is 50-50. Oh, I see.
No, it's given here because once I know the first element, I can predict what the response will be. I mean, I cannot predict I can also predict what the stimulus is, right? The fact that, okay, now I understand what the question is. So the fact that there is a like absolute 1 bit of mutual information here doesn't mean the input is not random, right? This just, it characterizes information transmission, not the input. So So input may be completely random, but you still have perfect transmission along the chain. Okay, so here's the simplest possible example. When you have one, I mean, I apologize for like really chewing on it. It's just I really enjoy it. So because so assume that there is one neuron which is actually random, and the rest are just deterministic. They have no random component. So of course, in this case, the decision made by the network is just function of the whatever processes biophysical process determine noise in this element, right? So one might argue that decision will be caused by biophysical processes in this element. Therefore, this element is the causal source of decision, right? So this is a decision maker.
I think the problem is that you're playing noise. I mean, really, if you put in any signal at each point, the correlation is going to be highest at the end of the chain. So whatever the strongest signal is, in this case, you have a single signal source in the middle of your chain, the output's going to correlate with that, and you're calling that your decision maker.
Yeah.
And you can call it a signal, not necessarily noise.
Right. So it may be input from other areas, for example. Yeah. So this noise has a loose definition. Of course, in my case, it has a sharp definition because I'm defining everything. In fact, I'm following this suggestion, which was made by Bill, and which was followed by Bill, is to study the problem first in computer, right, where you have total control, and then possibly move to, I mean, just to ask if you can answer this question, and if this question makes sense in computer. And there is infinite number of complications. For example, this noise may have origin, which may represent memories, or it may represent inputs from other areas. In my case, it's well defined. So in my case, I would argue that this guy is the decision maker. There is a bit of philosophy here, because if you accept this, then the threshold element, I mean, one of the temptations is to call threshold element the decision maker. But since threshold element is just a relay, which transmits information reliably, I mean, I'm reluctant to call a decision maker in this case, right?
But isn't, I think from statistical decision theory, people would call that the one that makes the continuous output to a binary decision, that would be the decision maker. Mm-hmm. And what your noise is, it's, I would say, it's what's driving, what's correlating, you know, what's driving your decision. But I think traditionally people actually call that fork where you make the binary, that the decision maker.
Right. So I'm contradicting to this statement.
Yeah. I mean, that guy is thresholding it the basis of two PDFs, right? A PDF for PDFs more than single-line. And he's saying, well, how far back into the past can I look and have a similar PDF? And when did this PDF first kind of put itself together? I think it's called the decision.
Yeah.
Basically, what you're saying is, what signal does the output correlate the most strongly with?
Right. Right. What I mean, so this guy has some kind of processes inside. Assuming that this is a neuron, this guy has some kind of local processes localized on this particular neuron. And those processes inside this neuron will determine what the output of the whole unit is. So I'm leaning toward calling this guy a decision maker rather than the threshold element. Okay, so I mean, it's up to your taste, of course. Then if you plot mutual information, of course, mutual information goes from low value to high value at this single bit, right? And then if you calculate derivative of mutual information, then you will find the decision maker. So I will be...
I mean, your definition is, I mean, if you define it at the end, it's stable against fiddling the network.
Yeah.
Your thing is completely unstable. Depends on the whole network. If I now modify, make a very noisy neuron down the line,
right,
the decision maker suddenly leaps from here to there.
Right.
Yeah. Whereas the guy at the end stays stable. So it's a very unstable characteristic.
Right, right. But I'm being honest here, right? I'm
but that's because the particular system that you looked at, sort of, the whole system has that instability, right?
Yeah, and I'll demonstrate this instability.
Keep going, can you take systems that look a little more robust in their decision making and still make this make sense? Right?
Okay. What if you have a lot of noise in the stimuli?
Yeah.
Really a lot of noise.
Yeah.
I know you don't want to call it noise. You want to call it the stimuli. You want to call it noise. But if you have a lot of noise, what's going to correlate the most with your decision is what's on the display. Is now the decision maker on the display?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's exactly the case. So, well, at least that's what I'm thinking of a decision maker. So basically, in this large signal-to-noise ratio, the decision maker is outside the system. So in some sense, the external condition is making decision for you. Yeah?
But then isn't it no longer stochastic then?
It's not stochastic. The decision, I mean, it's stochastic because the outside of the system is stochastic. If outside of the system was deterministic, it would be deterministic. But, right. So it's a terminology issue. I call stochastic decision making is when the source of decision is intrinsic noise to the system. Okay? I mean, it's just a terminology issue. But you are right. I mean, what I'm pointing at is whenever the mutual information, so basically the measure of information, the measure of decision on some element is the increase in the mutual information on this element. Okay, that's where I'm leaning toward. So in this case, noisy guy is the decision maker, and it's correctly pointed out by the derivative of mutual information. So in a sense, the points of emergence of motor correlations. So those guys have large motor correlations with response. Those guys have weak motor correlations, but the points of emergence of motor correlations are decision makers, which is a simple expression of the fact that the transition elements from sensory to motor, the interface between sensory and motor is are decision makers, right? So it's very intuitively clear from the very beginning. Okay, it's just some, I apologize, it's just some kind of Philistine example, expression of this idea. So well, everybody, like my daughter now can make a painting, like, I mean, this is a great painting by Matisse, but I mean, with all due respect, it's not technically advanced, right? So, but the reason why Matisse is considered like a greatest painter of the 20th century is because he made the decision, right, to call this artistic. Well, I can give much more. I apologize for this example. I just. Don't critique me. So basically, just to give me some leverage in front of this audience, I gave this because I gave this quotation, a little bit long quote from the review by Parker and Newsom, who summarized in this review, which I guess is called Sense and Single Neuron, in 1998, the findings of the literature. Of the end of 20th century. So this is basically my idea expressed here in this review. And so the idea is that the let me just start reading from here. Do the fluctuations in neural responses predict the probabilistic psychophysical decisions on the trial-to-trial basis? A positive answer to this question adds powerfully to the case that a particular set of neurons is contributing to perceptual judgment. Then neural responses and psychophysical decisions will vary trivially if the stimulus strength changes from trial to trial, possibly due to fluctuations in extraneous factors, as noted above. Okay. The more revealing case occurs when internal neural noise accounts for observed psychophysical variability upon successive presentations of externally identical stimuli. Okay. So it's just I'm not trying to really push you into thinking. I'm saying that whatever I'm saying is not completely new, and the little addition which I've made so far is you actually need to differentiate mutual information rather than just take the correlation. Yeah.
Going back to Dave's question, so if you have those motors which are related motors,
yeah,
then the function which are connected to the right is not necessarily positive.
Yeah.
Right. So you might have negative derivatives.
Yeah. This all will be covered. This I will cover all this. So here's another example. So what if you have a chain with uniform noise, right? In this case, the decision is just a function of sum of all noises, and since variances of noise are the same by my postulate, I should expect that all of those guys should be the same decision makers, right? Should have the same contribution to decision making. So, but if I plot mutual information, what I see is not a linear, not a line, but some kind of curve, which actually has a square root singularity here, has some kind of diffusive origin. Right. So how should I prepare it? So and just basically control to my theory. So the way I repair it is I calculate some kind of nonlinear function of this mutual information in this case, and I call it f of mi. And this nonlinear function fixes the nonlinearity, and now this f of mi will be linear, and it varies from 0 to 1, and if I differentiate it, I get uniform contributions. So the argument which I'm making here is that this function f of mi is actually relevant rather than mutual information for decisions, right? Huh? Because in this case, I want all of them have the same contributions. Because they have the same variances. No. So the decision is just a function of noises, sum of noises in all elements. There is no distinction in the order here.
He's chosen them to be uniform.
Right. I mean, it's just that by construct, I cannot tell a difference between elements.
Why isn't it constant? Why do we get this?
I calculated it. It's just computer. I plugged those variances in computer, and I got non-uniform function. No, because the last ones are more.
The noises are independent. So why do you get the mutual information not linear?
It's log of 1 plus signal to noise.
Yeah.
So it's a logarithmic singularity.
It's a square root singularity.
Sorry. So just to be sure, I understand the argument of symmetry. I could rearrange. The fact that the signal is being passed from one to the other is actually irrelevant here, right? So I could have just sent the signal, fanned it out to all n, added independent noise to each one, and added them all up.
Yeah.
And then it would be obvious that whatever it is that you call decision making can't break the symmetry of noise.
Right. Okay. Right. Okay. So, I mean, it's just a little, this function f of mi is not different from mutual information. So, it's basically a numerical difference. And for all practical purposes, you can use mutual information. Just in this single case where you can really control who decision makers are, it kind of fails a little bit. So here we go. Here's the solution of the problem. So here's a more interesting example. So what if you have exactly the same distribution of noise as previously? You have the same strength of noise. But one link is strengthened. So this, all the links in the network are one, and the one link it's actually a quiz. So you will have to give me the answer. So what if one link is very strong?
Xk plus one is k times xk.
Right. So who are the decision makers? What do you think? This one? Huh? Are there any other opinions?
Right.
So the decision now is just a function of all noises of elements number 6 to 11 here, plus k times the elements which are before that. So it's because this neuron, this element acts as a loudspeaker, right? So it kind of amplifies all noises, including the ones upstream from it. So I should say that all those elements from 1 to 5 should have the same contribution to decision making. And the elements downstream should have also the same, but smaller, right? And this is actually reproduced by mutual information, by this function of mutual information, which arises linearly, and then it saturates. Well, here there is also a slope, but it's much smaller than this slope, okay? So then if you differentiate f of mi, you will see that actually you can see that the amplitude of derivative of this f of mi is proportional to the strength of the link squared. And that's because even if link is inhibitory, right, those elements should still have strong contribution, right? So the function, whatever the function which distinguishes this element to this element, it should not depend on sine of k, right? And k squared turns out to be the solution to this problem. Okay, so this example leads me to the next definition, to the other definition, which is actually very more useful than this one, than derivative of mutual information. So here's another definition. So you can summarize all those cases in the following definition, that you can then produce the decision index for a node I, which determines how strong a decision maker this node is. And this decision index is just variance of noise multiplied by the gain from given element to the output of the system, which is in this case K squared.
Seems to assume Gaussian indices.
Yeah. Well, it's all done for Gaussian noise. Okay. So you can actually be a little bit more general about this definition. You could say that, again, you have a variance of noise multiplied by the derivative of the variance of the output with respect to this noise, right? Because obviously this k squared is just derivative of the variance of on the output over noise with respect to noise. So this is my main definition which I'm going to use throughout. Well, the advantage of this definition is that you can define decision makers for arbitrary network. Right, because this quantity can be calculated for systems with loops. So you're not limited to chains. And also it's kind of something which is, you can implement with stimulation. I'm going to be arguing that you can implement it with electric stimulation.
So there's no information here, it's just output.
What do you mean no information? There's no, it's not, I mean, I don't know how to define, my problem is that I don't know how to define decision index for networks of arbitrary connectivity based on information. I mean, this part of the work is not done yet.
But this was your motivation, if I understand.
I would like to use information theoretical approach, actually, but I don't know how yet, because I'm using, it's just a poor man analysis. This analysis is somewhat ugly, because I'm supposed to know what the output of the network is, for example, right? And I'm supposed to be able to measure noise of the network.
How are you defining variance of the output noise?
It's just that,
what's your definition of noise at that point?
Well, I have this xn, which is the last element of the network, which is averaged.
Yeah.
And in this example, it was k squared times x1 squared plus x5 squared plus x6 squared plus x11 squared, right? So, it's new. The noise. So in each component in the sum is just this contribution to decision making.
Well, that's a mean squared.
Right. Right.
But right. It goes back to stability analysis, essentially. That's what it is. You're just taking the derivative with respect to noise and the output to the ith element, something like efficient information.
I'm not sure if it's efficient information because it has this, well, it's indeed variance, but it has this gain. So there is a notion of connectedness.
Gain is precisely efficient information, like how sensitive is your output to small noise in the parameter.
Right, exactly. I'm not sure if it can be related to fission information, but you'll tell me probably more exactly. Yeah?
I guess when you say it measures the contribution to decision making, I guess I'm worried because it's not obvious that there's a sum rule. So you might think that if you added up the contributions of all the neurons, you'd get one.
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah.
And
Right. So this should be normalized. Of course, there is a normalization function factor here. Well, this is actually nicely normalized because, well, this measure is nicely normalized because this mutual information goes from 0 to 1. So whenever you differentiate, the sum has to be 1, right? So this is already automatically normalized. But this one is not normalized, indeed. So I mean, there are normalization factors here which I skip, and I apologize just for simplicity of my formulas.
But those become singular if one of the bonds becomes zero, right? So suppose you let your k go to zero.
Then it will become zero. The contribution will be zero because there is no connection.
So what happens to the normalization?
Well, whatever. Then I don't know. I mean, in this particular case, I don't know. maybe some other elements will, whatever other noises are, they will be contributing.
It seems to me there should be a correlation dependence here in this index of yours, but all you have here is just a straight mean squared measure.
Right. It's what I call XMN.
Yeah.
Why don't you use correlation? Because this has no, this trial to trial correlation on,
right,
the, on the average. Why couldn't you use just correlation?
Correlate with what?
Between the output and this.
You want the derivative of the correlation between the decision, so you should compute DDA.
Right, because I want a decision which is consistent with previous definition. Okay, so I want this decision to be identical for the cases which I considered before, and this, it will not be identical, because correlation, for example, will have k to the first power, rather than to the second. So.
And it will not be k. Okay.
Yeah. So. So I'm kind of trying to be a little bit neat here. But another thing is that, well, you can use this decision index. But if you don't know noise, you can use this thing as a decision index in principle. So this derivative just tells you how well this element is connected. It's independent on noise, right? It's k squared for this simple linear chain. So it tells you how well given element is connected to the output. So we actually call it topological decision making, because it basically describes position of the element in the network, right? So what is the potential contribution of this element to decision making if it was if it had some noise? Okay, so it's just a generic case. If I have some kind of Gaussian distribution of noise, I can reproduce it. So it turns out that using this mutual information based approach, you can study chains and you can study also trees, which are defined as networks in which there is only one outgoing element. So each element has only one output, okay, like neurons. but there are no feedback loops, or there are no feedforward loops, okay. So and in this case, you just need to generalize derivative on the network by considering this difference of unit matrix minus the connectivity matrix. So this implements a derivative, a discrete derivative on graphs. And F is a vector of those mutual informations. So in principle, right, so this analysis, mutual information-based analysis, could be used for such networks. But for networks with loops, there is no way to use, I mean, I don't know how to use mutual information approach. Yeah?
In such network, why do you insist that there is just one node which makes the decision there? There could be some combination of these nodes.
Yeah, like for example, in this case, there is a Gaussian distribution of nodes. Right. So in principle, you could argue that, right. So what you are saying, let me just respond because this will repeat again. Sorry. So instead of, well, my definition, which this definition, it just uses this variance of noise on one element. But you could say that decision making is actually corresponds to links of between elements, ij. Right, so you can define that, like, actually links, not point elements, but links are making decisions, like connections.
I'm saying maybe even many disconnected nodes everywhere in the network, I just, each of them separately is not enough to figure out what the decision is going to be. But if I look at five of them, you know, one here, one there, one over there, then that's what makes the decision. It's not just one node.
Some subset,
right?
But how is it different from the example with Gaussian I gave?
He's trying to identify one element.
I mean, here.
Each element, if tested like that, would have any decision making.
Right.
If take two of them, then on the two you can put the decision. But only on the two together.
Right, and that's the question which I started to answer. Right. So if you have, if you say that correlation between elements is making decision, right, then your decision index becomes a matrix of right. So you have decision making as a function of two indices, right. And in this case, it will be defined as this noise matrix, but which now is a noise cross correlation matrix, which is now a function of two indices, times a derivative of the output over this noise matrix. And you can add as many indexes as you want, including time. I mean, so basically, it's the simplest. What I'm talking about is the simplest version of this approach. I mean, you can like be as inventive as possible. Yeah.
Okay. So then this other question, which is, if you go back to one of the earlier questions, if each neuron in the chain, for example, depending on the stimulus you receive, so suppose you have some ensemble of stimuli,
yeah,
indexed by I,
yeah,
right? And each neuron, in addition to contributing a Gaussian noise term, contributes a term S sub alpha, where S sub alpha is different for each stimulus alpha,
yeah,
and also it's indexed by I for the neuron.
Right.
So you have S sub I alpha plus some noise.
Yeah.
In that case, it's problematic because the term that's injecting the largest variance,
yeah,
will depend on the stimulus, right? On,
yeah.
So it's an ensemble property.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure
but
if it can.
To identify the decision maker, actually, when you want to compute, is the derivative of the output, the final decision, the correlation of that with each element, and then take that derivative.
Exactly.
Right. You want to compute the correlation and then take the derivative. So correlation of each unit with the output of the decision, and then take the derivative of that.
I'm trying to control my definition, right? So I have a control for definition, which is linear chain.
That's going to have the same case for a dependence, though.
Okay, all right. Then, I mean,
okay.
Of course. I mean, it's just a generalization of the same thing, right?
No, it's different.
Why? How's it different?
You're not taking the derivative of the output. You're taking the derivative of the correlation between the output, the final decision, and the unit. That's, you're taking a derivative of a correlation.
But how do I get the k squared?
Yeah, okay, so we can discuss that later. But
I mean, I need to get k squared.
You will get a k squared.
Well, if I get k squared, I'll be happy, yeah. Well, there is infinite number of ways you can generalize this definition. I'm trying to go from simple to complex, right, rather than from complex to simple. So what happens if I have an arbitrary connectivity network, right? How can I generalize? Of course, the second definition is very instrumental in this case. So the generalization of this discrete case, which I consider just, I mean, I could consider just a linear equation, right, which is a vector of responses, and on different time slices, the vector of responses are related to each other through the connectivity matrix. Okay, and there is also a noise term which is added at each instant in time. This is the simplest linear network. And then, well, I will, again, as in the previous example, I will assume that noise is, well, in the previous example, there was no really time component, but I will assume that noise has a time, it's basically white noise with Gaussian correlation. So it's completely determined by this noise cross-correlation matrix, and which I will assume to be diagonal. Of course, I mean, there is infinite number of ways you can generalize it. So the answer will depend on this cross-correlation between two elements, right? Which I need to take for the output element and differentiate over noise in given element, right? So that's the task. So that's what I need to calculate. I need to find this quantity and differentiate it with respect to noise and multiply by noise in given element. Okay? And the way to do it is actually, I mean, this is the equation which actually determines this cross-correlation matrix, which is very interesting. Like, I mean, you easily can derive it. So it's interesting because it's a matrix equation. It's an equation for X. X is a matrix. C is a connection matrix. N is a noise matrix. But you cannot solve it, like in analytically. I mean, there's no way you can. There's no way you can solve it. I mean, I'll be talking about. I mean, you cannot just solve it on a line, right? So. But it's actually determines X matrix. It determines this matrix X. Because it's n squared equation. If size of the matrix is n, then it's n squared equations for n squared unknowns, right?
Depends on C, I guess.
Right.
C has to be a regular matrix.
Right. Well, normal. It has to be a good matrix. If it's bad matrix, then it's not solved. So for example, it cannot be like have zero determinant or something like that. Or unit determinant, I think. Right. So there are the ways to solve it. One of the ways, yeah?
So you really consider noise in this eta.
Yeah.
So how will you ever know, you know, in fact, if you observe the dynamical system, you can only compute the variance of some noise.
Yeah, that's my problem. That's my problem, yeah.
External noise.
Yeah, that's the internal noise to this element, which I need to know. And that's why I'm really dissatisfied with this approach. But for artificial nets, I can find it. I can find decision makers in artificial nets. Also, to respond to your question, so...
I'm not sure it's a good advice. Why do you really care what part of the variability is coming from external? Why do you only differentiate with respect to external noise and not with respect to the total variability?
It's internal noise for a given element. It's not external noise. It's the noise which is pertinent to given element of the network.
So, but in the equation, it comes as an additive external noise.
Well, it's external. I mean, it's added by, like, if you have spike generating mechanism, for example, and with respect to spike generating mechanism, it's external noise. But for a net
dynamical system, you cannot define this measure if there is no external noise. Although there will be a lot of variability, but your measure will be just undefined. I just try to understand if I understand correctly.
I don't know. For linear case, it will be defined. So if I have a network, I can cook up a network in my computer for which I can find what decision makers are, who decision makers are. Okay?
I'm saying if you have non-linear dynamical system.
Right.
And chaotic.
Okay.
And somehow you look at it and make your decision. And there is no external noise.
So set all your eta's to zero.
So you cannot define really what is decision. Although if you look from outside, it may look exactly like your system. Because there will be variability from trial to trial, and maybe
there is... There's still sensitivity to parameters.
But, I mean, behavior of chaotic system will probably depend on some kind of variables.
So you cannot say me yes or no. I'm just asking if for this
but
system.
But you can think experimentally. I mean, given it, that dynamical system, if I could from outside inject noise on the I node and look at how it increases the variability of the output, I could measure this sensitivity or derivative that he's talking about. Even so, I procedurally is well defined.
Not
but I would need to come and
control
the I
right.
node in a little amount of noise and see how that increases the variability of the output, and that would be the derivative. So
Sam,
you can always do it on top of anything else.
So you have to add. So you can do it by adding noise and then adding
noise. Yeah.
That's what
very,
you do.
Very small amount
yeah.
of noise on the I node and see how that increases the fluctuations in the output. So it's
yeah.
well defined in that sense.
What conditions do you have on a C matrix? Depends on what C matrix is.
Just arbitrary.
You can't see the noise, right?
Huh?
Depends on what C matrix is, you may or may not see the noise.
Right. So if, for example, this element is just dead end in some kind of, there's a branch of the network which ends at dead end. Yeah. So C matrix, I mean, I will just have zero contribution from this element. So the program here is, which you need to follow for arbitrary network is very simple, actually. So you take this equation, you solve it, and then you differentiate the answer in the form of this X matrix with respect to noise in one element, right? And then you call it decision maker. And it will be consistent with linear chains. So if you use this procedure, if you apply this procedure to linear chains, you will get exactly the same answers from mutual information. Okay? That's the only advantage. Of course, the advantage is that there is no way to measure this noise because it's intrinsic to neuron. Right. So, I mean, I can measure it in computer because I cook everything up in computer, but, right. So here's one way to solve this equation. So you could, in principle, use this, use eigenvalue basis for the matrix C, for connection matrix, if it exists. In fact, in the simplest possible example of linear chain, there is no eigenvalue basis, which is complete. So you cannot use this approach. Right, because it's already in Jordan form or something. But so you cannot diagonalize matrix in the linear chain example. But if you can diagonalize the matrix, connection matrix, in some eigenbasis, then you can solve this equation using eigenvalue basis, which is, in this case, you need to use left eigenvalues because matrix is not symmetric. And then the answer for decision making is given by this expression, which is, which basically gives decision making from node I to the output N. And the point which I'm making here is that decision making will be delocalized if eigenvalues of this matrix will be delocalized. Yeah.
Do we really need to solve the equation, or can it implicitly be
solved? I don't know how to. I mean, for each. I mean, you take a derivative, and but you need to solve this equation. For each time you take a derivative, you need to solve this equation.
Yeah.
So N matrix is actually when you take the derivative, you could use like N matrix which has only one component. And it's a little bit ugly way. That's not the way how we solve it. So this is also not the way how we solve it, because matrix C is not diagonalizable in all cases. So eigenvalue basis is also useless. But the point which I'm making here is that decision making will be delocalized if eigenvalues of this matrix, if left eigenvalues are delocalized.
What does it mean delocalized?
If eigenvalue is like, if you have an eigenvalue which is just occupies the whole system of matrix C, then decision making will be delocalized. It will be a democratic system. Eigenvector. I'm confused. My mind is sometimes it's just given by this expression. So if, for example, eigenvector alpha is delocalized, so it's present on both node N and I. Right, so you will have an opportunity to have delocalized decisions. Of course, I mean, it's just a simple geometric property which I like. And of course, this is sufficient but not necessary condition, because you may have localized eigenvectors, but still distributed decision making, like in the case of linear chain. In linear chain, you have this matrix which is not diagonalizable, and all like eigenvalues, eigenvectors are localized, which in this case is like generalized eigenvectors. But still you have distributed decision making. So
for the operation of each node linear.
Yeah. So it's a linear model, as you can see here.
But these are right. All feed forward only, right?
No. Matrix C may have loops. Right. So you have this. The way we solve this equation is using just iterations, right? So you iterate it, and it's very convenient and it fast.
But if it has loops, then you're basically throwing out with this model. You're throwing out any real time-like behavior of those loops, right?
No. Why? It doesn't. I mean, in loops. I will show you some examples of time behavior in loops in a second. Which are very intuitively clear, but. But basically, I mean, the way we solve it in computers, we just iterate, and it is convenient. Of course, there is a problem with loops. So if connection matrix has like explosive loops, then my process will not converge. But in this case, I mean, this is a limit of the analysis. Okay, so this is the example of such loop, and I'm just trying. In the next few slides, I'll emphasize that it's an important system. So this loops like this, if all the links have unit strength, then links like this may act as memory systems, right? And this is shown here by this cheesy cartoon. So basically, if I have a zero in, I apologize for this. It's just the explaining what persistent activity is to biologists. So if I have a not persistent activity, what parametric memory system is? So parametric memory is basically this value of parameter 1 will circulate in the system, but it may not be 1, it may be 2, right? So this loop will store arbitrary value of real parameter. So it's a memory system which doesn't act like a switch, but it's a real number which is stored. And also this system can act as temporal integrator. So if you have input to the system, the value of parameter which is stored will increase, as shown by another cartoon. So this simple loop is important because it may accumulate evidence, for example, if it's sensory evidence. In fact, it's the simplest model of area LIP.
Integrator.
Right, so it's just integrator. So So it's one of the simplest models, like effective models for area LIP, which accumulates, which has signals which are proportional to accumulated sensory evidence. So what if I insert such loop into my system? So what if my network has a little loop like this? So here's another quiz. So I have this network, and I plug it into my calculator, matrix calculator. What do I get as a decision maker? What do you think? And the numbers here inside are just number elements. I mean, I apologize for this. It's just the strength of noise is the same everywhere. What do you think? Right, exactly. So those guys, 1, 2, 3, 4, will be the decision makers.
In the limit of an infinite time, right?
Right, yeah. Right. Because noise, not only signal, but also noise accumulates there. So this system will act, this four system of four nodes will act as a noisy neuron, as a noisy neuron example.
Sure, it's kind of.
But if you change the function of time, if your connection really is 1,000 there, originally the
right.
Will not dominate 5 and 6.
Right. So you need to wait 1,000 seconds or something,
right.
Or square root of this, or square of this. So right. So the if I put it, and indeed, if I put my program, it will give me this four. Those four elements will be emphasized as decision makers. How about this example? In this case, all links I gain once. And again, there is a loop, but it's a feed-forward loop. Right, because it has two directions by which it's connected. So its effective gain is 2. So the contribution is actually will be four times larger than another element. So it's a fan-out effect. That's what we call fan-out effect. So right. So that's another way of, and it's actually it shows an example of constructive interference.
Is it really fan-out effect, or is it a number of paths effect? If this guy found out a lot of interpaths that eventually really don't close and don't come to the output?
Right. It's a number of,
so
indeed, right. Like, yeah, a more accurate description. Yeah. But
yes, how many ways you have to go in here?
So it's an example of constructive interference, actually. So noise is amplified because all gains are ones. So if at least one link was -1, the noises would compensate and contribution would be 0, right? So there is interference between paths in this graph, which right. And so this element is shown as a decision maker by our program. So I mean, you can basically, it's a little bit opportunistic at this moment, but you can define this topological decision making measure, since I don't know noise in each cortical area, just to this graph, right? So you can calculate this topological decision making for this path, and in this case, for this matrix, which is documented. So assuming that frontal eye fields is the output area, and you will see that, actually what you will see is the broad contribution to decision making from many areas, mostly from parietal stream.
What did you take as an output?
Huh?
What did you take as an output?
Yeah. Output is frontal eye fields.
This is an output?
Yeah. So it's basically analysis of geometry of these graphs, which shows that potential decision making is actually distributed. So each element in parietal stream has contribution, potential contribution to decision.
What about the strength of the connection?
Yeah, that's the. There is a little bit of cheating here, because I mean I don't know the strength. There is anatomically defined strength of connections in this matrix. So if you look at but it's like really, really approximate. So it's there is a little bit of cheating there.
So
right.
Why is before? So I guess I'm trying to understand your code there. Why is before so highlighted?
Why before is highlighted? I mean, I haven't analyzed what is the reason.
Okay.
I mean, they're more or less uniformly highlighted, with some areas more than others. But I mean, I need to look more about the why before is more important than, say, VP or V2. So, but mostly it's the fan-out effect. Like most frequently, it's, I mean, the networks I looked at, it's mostly fan-out effect. So the question now is if I can find decision makers in networks of arbitrary connectivity and without knowledge of connectivity matrix. And the answer is yes, but I need to use electric stimulation. Right, and here's an example of simplest electric stimulation. Of course, I mean, this is all simulation done in computer, so it's not a real stimulation, but I'm just studying the possible example. So here's the network, and it responds. So this is the output of the network, and this is the distribution of the output. And I'm assuming that it's a zero signal to noise ratio case, so both positive and negative values are possible. So it's basically generating, the network is, oops.
That's noise.
Why did it just do it?
Yeah,
you
find the node.
Oops. Yeah. Well, here we go. Come back in a second. Yeah, so basically, just 1 minute. It's in standby, actually. I missed the critical battery warning. Here we go. So if you apply just tonic stimulation, and there is, of course, a lot of approximation here because, I mean, normally stimulations are done with alternating current because presumably tonic stimulation, if you just inject current into cell, it dies. So experimentally, people apply alternating current to stimulate cells. So if I apply tonic stimulation or constant alternating current of constant amplitude, then what happens is that the probability distribution of the output variables will shift, right? So it will just produce a bias. So the question is, so probability of responses equal to 1 will be now larger than probability of responses 0, right? So here they were the same, but here it becomes larger. So the question is, if I can judge about decision making by the change in probabilities, by the bias which is introduced by stimulation. And the answer is that yes, you can do it. One thing which you need to do is you need to square this thing, because this difference may be negative. If there is an inhibitory link in the network, the difference may become negative. So you need to actually square this difference. And for trees, it gives an accurate measure of decision making, right? So you can go through with this analysis and prove this. But it fails for systems with loops, like in this example, for example, when there are two pathways leading from element one to the output, and one of them is excitatory, another one is inhibitory. If you apply tonic stimulation, the change in probability is 0. Right.
Sorry, what does the term tonic mean?
Tonic means constant in time.
Oh, constant time.
Since it's constant in time, there are different delays here, uh-huh. Right? Okay. But since it's constant in time, it will add up to 0 on the output.
Well, I think you need more time dependence in your model and use a strict correlation function when you define your information index.
Right. So that's right. So basically, what you need to do is you need to stimulate with random current. And what random current, I mean, to implement my measure, which I introduced before. So the random current will, because there are different time delays, will produce a result on the output. Mm-hmm. And what will happen, it will act as a distractor, right? So it will actually make the response of the performance worse, right? So before you had this Gaussian distribution, but it will become broader because you added some noise, more noise to the system. Okay, so but by doing so, you can calculate this derivative operationally, right? So this change in probability, it will be always less than 0. Probability of correct responses will be always less than 0, but this change in probability is proportional to this derivative. Okay, so in principle, with injecting random current, injecting distractors, you can calculate, I guess, as Sarah was suggesting. That you can implement this, taking this derivative. One thing is that, one interesting thing is that the performance cannot be, I mean, it cannot be totally zero signal to noise ratio case. Because in zero signal to noise ratio case, if you before distractor had like 50% chance of performing correctly, you add a distractor, you still have 50% chance, right? Because you don't improve performance by adding distractor. So So the change of probability in completely zero signal-to-noise ratio case will be zero, so you cannot really calculate this derivative. And also, if probability is definite, if it's high signal-to-noise ratio case, then also it doesn't work because change in probability will be very exponentially small. Change in probability of correct response will be exponentially small. So there is an optimal value of probability at which you should perform this analysis, and it corresponds exactly to the point of inflection of this Gaussian here. So it's given by 84% correct responses. So here's some example of social networks. It's just, I mean, I didn't really look at this accurately, and like I thought that every time you have network architecture, you can in principle calculate this topological decision-making index. So this is connectivity matrix, which I stole from this textbook on social analysis of social networks. And it's this connectivity matrix for some West Coast high-tech company, basically advise relationships between 21 manager of some company. Red is one, blue is zero.
It's zero. So,
yeah. So it's advice relationship means that, well, of course, there is a sign there, right? Because managers may not trust believe each other.
So plus one means that manager has to, manager J has to listen to manager I. Or,
right.
And zero, that means.
Right. They don't talk. Right. If they go smoking, they don't communicate. So with what is shown on the bottom is the decision index. But since I don't know the output node, I calculate it for arbitrary for all output nodes. Right. So what?
How's output defined?
Well, you have this network,
right.
And then somebody, some guy, uh-huh. This guy, for example, yeah. will represent the opinion of the whole company.
Oh.
Right. So he will decide eventually. Like he'll be this threshold function. Right. So for arbitrary output node, for all output nodes, I calculate this decision index, which is given by this vector. And you can see that actually decision maker index doesn't really change too much. I mean, it's not really important. Those are the guys who don't talk to each other.
No, the diagonal.
Right. So this guy on the diagonal is highlighted because he doesn't talk to anyone. So he's having his own opinion. So he only makes decision when he's asked. he's the output.
But he's not connected to the other.
Well, he's weakly connected to other guys. And those guys who have strong contribution, like the red ones, they actually have large, those are those vertical lines. They have large fan out. Okay? And this is just this graph which with the decision shown by red color.
But the graph is directed in this case.
Yeah.
It's not shown.
Yeah, it's just not shown, yeah. Because my procedure is undirected. So, but you can calculate inverse participation ratio for this graph, which will show.
Directed, I should have a symmetric matrix on it.
It's undirected. It's not directed.
It's not directed.
The procedure which plots the graph is doesn't know how to, because MATLAB, there's no function in MATLAB which draws arrows. Well, not the most standard. So basically, there is. Well, you'll teach me that. I mean, I'm really hurting without it. So the inverse participation ratio in this case is about 50%. So about 50% of guys on the average are making the decision.
I see. And if you do the same procedure to Cold Springs Harbor, where with Watson
did? I'm not allowed to do that. It's just
you do it in
but I could do it for another example, which is some business relationship between families in 16th century Florence, which is another example of this from this book.
So this is symmetric now.
Right. So since it's business relations, it's just completely symmetric. So again, you could see that there is a cluster of families, which are really linked to each other, and the other guys are just not really in the circle.
I see. So, for example, the one is completely blue, right? It's not so it's
right.
Not even
right. So doesn't interact with anyone, right? So I define decision index in the same way, and then I throw away all the families outside this circle.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Okay, and so here are the families which are inside this circle. So for them, adverse participation ratio is 76%, which is larger for this West than for this West Coast company. So therefore, I just kind of like this example. So again, this is not the actual, I mean, this is not the physical decision, because it's just based on the topology of the network, right? So how well the topology of the network is suited for them to participate in the decision. So of course, there are other ways. I mean, basically, you can apply it to any cases in which the network topologies exists, which are multiple. For example, analysis of spike generating mechanism in a cell. I mean, you could apply it in principle, and other cases. I guess this is it. Thank you for your attention.